were talking about what topic I should come up here and talk about, and really our view of marketing is honestly a little different than most. And to that point, we've become the fastest growing marketing agency in the country because we also kind of drink our own punch and market ourselves. But really what I want to talk about is how social media fits into the broader scheme of things and how social media advertising standalone is kind of worthless and how you need to do a lot of other things to actually make it do something. So we're going to use a case study of ours with CO Beauty to talk about what we did there to actually 5x their revenue when they were already doing Facebook advertising. So there's a little bit about us, and the intro was awesome, but we just turned 4 years old. We just grew past 125 people, all in Santa Monica. Basically our model is a la carte month-to-month marketing services. So a little background on me. I've had 3 e-commerce companies over the past decade, 1 in music and 2 in fashion. Sold both of the fashion companies, and then about 4.5 years ago started advising for a lot of brands on how to drive revenue growth using different digital tactics. Quickly found that there was a huge problem with actually executing on these things, because there's 2 options. You either hire a team in-house or you hire an agency. What I found was hiring a team in-house generally isn't cost-effective for the full team. Hiring like a CMO, fine, but having every little individual that has every skill set in-house doesn't make sense, which is why agencies exist. Problem is 99% of agencies are full of shit. The few that are any good tend to get really expensive, want long contracts, high minimums, something that makes them hard to work with. So got sick of it, never planned on building an agency myself, but hired 7 people that were like my SWAT team. And my idea was I'm gonna start helping out all these companies and help them do it, and then maybe I'll start my own brand and use them too. That was my original plan. But I quickly found when I hired those 7 people, and each was a different expert. So a Facebook person, email, influencer, web design, strategy, search, the different pieces I saw really helping grow a brand. I found that this need was a lot bigger than I thought. And so we, again, become the fastest growing in the country. We're the 5th fastest growing business in LA, period, by revenue, all on this model. And to me, like, we're month to month, we're a la carte. Like, it's a very easy business that doesn't necessarily retain clients unless we do good work, but it just shows that this was a huge need. So now to talk a little bit about CO. So CO, basically are wrinkle patches. It started with helping women fix chest wrinkles, because when women, as they get older, sleep on their side, it actually can cause chest wrinkles. And these temporarily, for one day, fix those, and then they got into face wrinkles, hand wrinkles, et cetera. Yeah, didn't know about it either. Learn every day. Right, yeah, that was my same reaction. So some of the things and I'm gonna explain why, but these are just a list of some of the things we did with them. So we looked at overall marketing strategy, positioning, branding, et cetera. We bought media on both social and search. And by the way, I'll have my email at the end of this, happy to send anyone the slide deck, just so you guys know. We did their creative and branding. We ran their email marketing, their influencer marketing, all their social media, and then amplified some content around it. I just want to give you guys an idea of this before I get into why. So this goes to kind of the principle of how we look at marketing. We look at it as 3 pillars: awareness, nurturing, trust. Awareness is what most people think of as marketing. It's really advertising. It's getting the brand out there. It's getting impressions. It's making people aware that your company exists. Certain things that create this, search marketing is great because, you know, it's nice you're answering existing demand. You're getting people that are looking for something like you, make them aware you exist. Facebook's a great way to drum up new demand, reach people that you think might like your product. In their case, you know, what they thought was women in their late 40s, 50s that were experiencing this, they were creating awareness around that, which is what they were actually focusing on. Nurturing is what you do after you get that awareness. So most people don't buy right away anymore. Most people think about a purchase, do research on a purchase. They're not just like, you know, the age-old DRTV, like, you know, direct response marketing is dying. Like, I can tell you from firsthand experience with a lot. We do Proactives Digital as an example. That throw up a TV commercial and get a sale right there doesn't work anymore in a general scheme of things. Most of those companies that have that strategy are really failing fast. It's because people have a consideration period that's extended. Really, you know, they've called this the age of information. Part of the effect of that is now information's everywhere, so people actually take time to look it up because there's places to look. And so how we deal with that on the nurturing aspect is we do a lot of email marketing. So when people come to the site, the first thing we do is ask for an email address because we generally don't expect them to buy right away. So if you have that expectation, that means you're gonna do everything you can to grab at least a light piece of information so you can follow up. Then we automate the email strategy, and I'll go more in detail into the different strategies, but we automate it so that we can follow up over that consideration period. And what we've seen is, you know, from basically the best measurement and the highest correlation for consideration period is price point, your average cart. $50 average cart, average consideration period, 3 weeks. $100 average cart, the average consideration period, 5 weeks. $200, 6 weeks, starts to taper off from there. You're only gonna have a few months before they're gonna make a decision on any price point, but in that lower price point area, you need to assume that, which also means you need to track your awareness and the returns on it over a period of time, because you have to assume that most people aren't gonna just purchase right away. This is really important with all the tracking sides of Facebook advertising. That's why they have a 28-day window, but what you have to understand is if it's over $75, that 28-day window is still not even a good window into how many purchases you're getting from advertising on social. And so you can help minimize that consideration period and maximize the returns on it by following up through email, doing retargeting. Show of hands, everyone know what retargeting is? Figure this, okay, cool. Retargeting is really important there. We're getting into a lot more into SMS and Facebook Messenger as well. You know, Facebook Messenger, honestly, it just opened up that way, so it's working. SMS was really invasive for a long time, but for some reason, I guess people started getting used to being marketed to more. We've seen a lot better reaction to texting. Very different from email. Email is about, you know, it still can be kind of one-to-many and feel marketing, like my marketing material, where it's like, hey, here's, you know, why we're great. Here's people that love us. Here's our top sellers. You know, just those different value propositions that help bring people along the funnel. On the SMS side, it needs to feel like almost a customer service outreach. It needs to be more one-on-one. Hey, how can we help you? Do you have any questions? Same thing with Messenger. But what we've seen is that connection can really drive an increase in conversions. The last piece, trust. And this is really important. One thing to understand is, you know, this is a tripod. You knock one of these out, you're gonna have a really terrible marketing campaign. Trust, Edelman did a study. Number one, 75% of people said the number one reason they buy something is because they trust the brand. So if they don't trust your brand, they don't know who you are, your conversions are gonna be pretty bad. Ways to, you know, create trust, press is great. Third-party validation of some kind. So influencer marketing is another one. If it's more authentic. The problem with influencer marketing that we've seen recently is with the FTC crackdown, they now have to say it's an ad, therefore you lose the trust and authenticity, and really it becomes more of an awareness campaign than anything. That trust kind of goes away. So that's actually been a declining aspect. General celebrity endorsement deals people are usually okay with and like respond better to because they feel like those people have more to protect their brand, and so they're not just going to throw their name on anything. Anything you can do to basically create that validation. Another one is customer reviews, testimonials, that you figure out how to build that trust with people during that consideration period and nurturing period, because they're all looking for it. And that will severely increase your ROI on the awareness campaigns you're running, which is the most expensive part of marketing. So yeah, this is what we look at as ecosystem. So our goal here was to boost awareness and, you know, create new leads on the e-commerce side, grow their email subscription, and then, you know, help them work on the product. So getting into this, we found, you know, their brand again was targeting 45 to 60 year olds. They just made an assumption. We see this a lot. People come into a brand, they create a product, they pick their customer. They go, that's my customer, go after them. I know it because I created the product. And 9 out of 10 times, there's still 10% they're right. 90% of the time they're wrong. You can't pick your customer. Great example of this, show of hands knows Shoe Dazzle. Remember Shoe Dazzle. Okay. Raised $100 million, shoe company in LA, Kim Kardashian was the face of it, and they were really popular, and the whole brand looked like, you know, it was targeting college kids, teens, you know, girls in their 20s, and it was a subscription shoe company. And the cool thing about them is everything about their branding screamed, you know, millennial woman. But their most core customer, the customer that was most saturated, that had the highest conversion rate, was an average age of 47 African-American woman in the South. If you saw, look up Shoe Dazzle later, you would not guess it, but that's what we've learned is your customer picks you. So what, now they had a good, had a marketing that figured that out. What they were doing was targeting 45 to 60 year olds that were, you know, high net worth, basically the founder's peers. You know, high net worth, 45 to 60, metropolitan areas, like this is for me, so it's obviously for people like me, which they were getting sales, but it was minuscule. And so the first thing we did was let's widen this out and test it out. And what we found was women as young as 28, 29 were buying just as often, because it's, just to be real, wrinkles start at a younger age. They don't start it in your 40s. And you know, that we were able to reach them also from a preventative level, from everything, that there was a lot wider of a customer base. And then we started to implement all these other strategies. So, and I'll talk about, get to that in a sec. And then basically, again, we added a lot of, we built out the funnel. They were literally just sending ads to a Facebook page and hoping people converted. And like we talked about earlier, doesn't work that well. So they were, you know, what we've seen traditionally is when you actually create it, just an email funnel, don't worry about any other stuff, not optimizing the site, not anything else, just adding an email funnel to a Facebook campaign can double to triple your ROI. We've seen up to triple just by adding an email drip campaign. So, and I'll go in, I'm going into the details, but basically the end result of what we saw was we got 5 times year-over-year growth, multi-million dollar business now, and we didn't increase the budgets in the beginning at all. So, strategy. Talked about this a little bit, but we repositioned the brand. We actually, they were, you know, all the images were of women in their 40s, you know, mid-40s to 60s, and we added younger women as well, so it was like we could speak to everyone. We just opened it up a little bit. Like, and the thing about most brands, especially in the beauty category, beauty, lifestyle in general, it's aspirational. People want to aspire to be whatever that you're showing them. And, you know, some people are going to aspire to be a beautiful older woman, but a lot of people, you know, it's just human nature, aspire to be younger. That's why this works. That's why Victoria's Secret models look like they do. And so when we added that aspect, it actually, you know, it helped open it up to a lot of people that, you know, had different aspirations from an emotional level. We changed the brand voice a little bit, on again, brought more youth to it. And we would have never expected this, but we wanted to test it. And we A-B test all of this, by the way. We always keep what they're doing and then test it against, you know, drive half traffic to what they're doing, half the traffic to what we're going to test, and just and then measure the results. We measure revenue growth. We measure conversion rates, click-through rates, everything. But at the end of the day, revenue growth matters. Because what sometimes you'll see is, like, click-through rate will drop down, but conversion will go up. And so it can either be even out, and then we know that, okay, now we're what we're understanding is we're filtering out more people on the homepage, but they're the right people that are getting through. So looking at the end result is really important. Make sure you watch all your metrics, not just one. And then, yeah, we basically expanded across the channels and built a new brand category. On the advertising side, very simple. We decreased their cost per acquiring a customer the first month by 68%. It's a big jump. Saved them a lot of money, and all it was widening what they were doing. You know, we also manually bid. One thing that a lot of people do is they like set up Facebook and let it run itself. A lot of times there's nuances that a machine can't figure out. Like, you know, I always use this when we're talking about programmatic or automated bidding. Be very careful with that with Facebook, because when you talk about AI or machine learning, if you look to Ray Kurzweil, who's the number one foremost expert in AI, he's just became head of AI at Google. He never had a job before. He's just known as the expert. He says AI will be actually real around 2029. Currently, our laptops or machines that are doing the thinking have the brain of about a mouse, processing-wise. So when you say, like, yeah, let Facebook automate it on its own, you're letting a mouse run your marketing. Just think of it that way, because you sincerely are. So what happens there is you run a sale. Like, the perfect easy example of this is it's optimizing two ads. If you take really extreme different ads, like one has 40% off the product and one is just a branding ad, Facebook itself is just going to run to the 40% off the product because it's going to see conversions and click-throughs and time on site. And it's going to go, you know, all the indicators and go, yeah, that's obviously a better ad. It doesn't understand the nuances of the difference in the ad. So you need a human touch on it still. And they were, again, letting it run. We jumped in, found a lot of these nuances, and were able to optimize it as well. On the search side, and this is rare, by the way, but what we were able to find is there are a lot of non-branded search. So this is something important in general in search and Facebook. Facebook is a great place to create demand. Search is a good place to answer demand. Both awareness channels, talking about the pillars. So Facebook is where you go when there might not be a need for your product or people might not be actively looking for it, but you can target a certain type of person that would absolutely want to see it. When you know that your product has that capability, beauty, any kind of lifestyle brand, Facebook's amazing. It's going to be your best ROI and your highest scalable growth. If you're a DUI attorney, Facebook's probably a waste of time, because you trying to target someone based on interest or socioeconomic info to assume they have a DUI and catch them at the right time is probably not going to happen. So you can't really create demand for someone having a DUI. You can, I mean, you maybe can do subliminally, but that's probably not a good thing to do. Search, on the other hand, is, you know, on the other side of things, it's when people are looking for something like your product. So it doesn't work well in things like fashion. It doesn't work well in certain types of beauty categories that are more lifestyle driven. Where it does work is when you're solving a specific problem. Because if someone has a problem, like I have chest wrinkles, what do I do? This is where you can actually show them a solution. And when you have a problem solution driven product, search can work really well. So, in this case, they were literally just running CO Beauty as a branded keyword. Rule of thumb, unless someone else is going after your brand, like trying to bid on your keywords, don't do it. You're gonna rank number one on Google most of the time anyways, and you're just wasting money. You're basically, I see this, I actually did this the other day, and I hate to call them out, I hope they're not in the room, but most luxury beauty or luxury fashion brands do this. We've seen it over and over again, so I just took a guess. I was speaking at USC the other day, and I was telling them, like, every luxury brand loves to bid on their branded keywords because someone somewhere convinced them to do it, and some agency like ours that charges a percentage of spend said, we're gonna put a ton of money here and get you an ROI. So with search, if you look on a high level, you know, perfect example with Chanel, I'm just gonna use as the example, they could be spending 20 grand a month on search and making 100 grand. Looks great. When they get their reports from their search agency and they show it to their boss, it looks awesome. Now, when you dive in one layer below, out of that $20,000 you're spending, usually about $2,000 or $3,000 spent on their branded keyword. It's like, okay, well, that's first off a waste of money. If I'm looking for Chanel, I'm gonna find Chanel. But second off, on the ROI side, about 95 grand of the revenue is coming from that 3 grand, which then means they're spending 17 to make 5. I know it's a lot of numbers, but at the end of the day, on non-branded keywords, they're spending $17,000. The revenue driven by that is 5,000. So search in general, bad channel for fashion. Yeah. In their LTV, meaning what? No, I'm talking about just on first purchase. Yeah. LTV could probably escalate it enough to make it a little more reasonable, but it's still, you're not necessarily acquiring customers through search is generally, if that you're, again, you're answering existing demand. So the chance of some, like actually show of hands, who here recently Googled pants and bought a pair of pants? I'll tell you many companies that make pants bid on the keyword pants, thinking they're gonna get a customer. Sometimes you just gotta take a step back and use logic. So in this case, we found that it was actually on the other side. People were looking for solutions to wrinkles. This worked really well, and it ended up being a very good growth channel for them because we were able to grab demand for the solution, not even for the category, but they're just a solution in general and actually drive revenue this way. And sorry, I couldn't show numbers, they asked me not to, but so I had to do percentages. Email. So this, again, huge, huge, huge piece. 5 times more revenue, 68% less spend, and a lot of that was driven through email. So we were able to grow their newsletter in 5 months by about 300% because of the decrease in cost per acquiring customers, targeting the right people, and doing the proper email collection. And then, you know, we like Klaviyo is one of our favorite email platforms. We're not sponsored by them. It's basically almost as cheap as MailChimp, but a lot more robust. So it's a really nice e-commerce. I think Shopify's top email partner at this point. And basically we set up, you know, email capture and automation to nurture people into a sale. And A/B tested different messages to see what would convert the highest and what would, again, decrease that consideration period. From there, we started A/B testing different promotions. We tested small audiences with really extreme promotions to see how much could we really drive. Because you don't want to launch, like we did, I think it was 40% off for Cyber Monday. And we wanted to test that, so we tested it on Black Friday with a small group just to make sure that the conversion was going to be high enough to justify the discount. Because if it's not, you might as well just stick with what you're doing. So really important, again, like I can't emphasize enough, we won't take an advertising client on unless they're doing this or we're doing this. We're okay with a company that wants to do it themselves, but we won't touch it if no one's doing it because we just can't be successful. We can't run ads and successfully compete with everyone else that's doing it right because it's a bidding system. You're competing with everyone else bidding on those ads unless you're doing everything else with that traffic to make sure it converts. Influencer. So in this case, Gigi, the founder, has a lot of influential friends and celebrity friends. And so we were able to leverage her friends, as well as some influencers we have connections with that actually saw the need for this and drive some validation here. Because let's be real, if you randomly Google, you know, I have wrinkles, what do I do? And you see CO Beauty, you've never heard of it before, you generally aren't gonna just like buy a medical patch and throw it on your chest. You're gonna do some research and look around. And so we wanted to get some blog posts and some Instagram content out there of people that could actually be trusted. And then we use that content on Facebook so that we're getting that combination of awareness and trust at the same time. The idea is, you know, you've got someone that is recognizable, we advertise to their audience and people that may know who they are, about the product. And so now, again, you're able to create that awareness and trust that now the considerations period is more just like, oh, I got to get around to that if they need it. Makes it, it really can shorten that as well. Social media management, honestly, and it did drive revenue in this case, but generally, it's a necessary evil. It's not a big marketing channel. It's not going to make you a lot of money anymore. Facebook says it publicly. Like they continue to limit the amount you can reach your audience. So actually spending money and time to build out your Facebook page or build out your Instagram following, which is owned by Facebook, don't forget that, it's not really worth it. But people do look to your page sometimes to gauge credibility. So if you're a product that needs more trust, every product's different. If you're a fashion company, all I'm worried about is, you know, is it going to look good on me and is it going to last a little bit or is it going to fall apart? If it's something like a nutraceutical or something I'm going to ingest, I'm going to do a lot of research before I just swallow the pill you're selling me. So you have to gauge how much trust you need and put more emphasis into that depending on your product or service. But with social media, yeah, on consumer products, sometimes they'll go there just to check your reviews or check out what people are saying or if you're even active, but it's not really an engagement tool anymore. There's some cool new softwares coming out that are in the spirit of like Facebook pages. There's one called Bee, it's like thebeeinc.com. And we've been testing a bunch of different betas where you can actually still aggregate your fan base and like engage them the same way you used to be able to on Facebook pages. And that's really cool because that's where you can get increased word of mouth and brand equity. And all the things I'm talking about are pretty direct response marketing still. And when I say direct response, I don't mean immediate response, but you're still talking about ROI and performance-driven marketing. To build a long, sustainable brand, you need to build that fan engagement too and really get word of mouth going. Word of mouth is the number one driver of success for a business. No matter, you know, if you can get every person to refer one person, you just doubled your ROI on all this advertising. So incentivizing that, getting people really feeling like they're connected to you on an emotional level as a brand is important. And you can't cheap it. Like people know, people can feel it, people can understand authenticity. So platforms, social media content these days, it's still a way to do it, but there's some better ways coming out. That's, again, just highlighting that. This strategy alone was able to grow this business incredibly, a lot. This year, we're shooting for 15x growth, and we're on track to get to 15x growth, and last year was 5x. So like we are able to just ramp this up, because now that we have a model that works and is profitable, you can just turn on the fire hose, so to speak. So want to leave time for questions. Thank you. I know it was a talk fast and a lot. Yeah.
I work for a ad agency, and their client, she works for an interconnect solutions industry, which is really different from retail, and it's not really like a sexy industry.
Sure.
So it's really hard to create content that attracts, you know, engineers and like our target audience like that.
Uh-huh. And so tell me more about the business.
So we make connectors and components for commercial and military airplanes.
Okay.
So our target audience is engineers.
Engineers in the aerospace field?
Yes.
Got it. Cool. So, yeah, I mean, we've done stuff like that too. So really, it's still the same pillars. The thing is, awareness, when you have a finite group of people, you don't need to worry about advertising. Like, that's what's nice about it. If you're not just trying to reach the general consumer, you have like a list of 10,000 or 50,000, I don't know the number, but people, you can just go find, like, there's enough data companies that you can just go pull their email addresses and phone numbers. Not the nicest thing to do, but on a B2B level, you're allowed to. It's not in the Can't Spam Act, so don't quote me, I'm not a lawyer, but from my understanding, it's not. And you're allowed to email these people. And so usually when we're doing most B2B and high-level purchases, you want to reach out directly to the person, whether it's a phone call or email. That awareness period is done directly. It's not done through ads. Then once you have them in, email's still a function. Educate them, do drip campaigns, educating them on why they should be talking to you guys. Again, trust is huge. Show them thought leadership, show them other people in their field that are liking you. You know, if Northrop uses you, tell everyone at Boeing, whatever. You know, I really build out that validation that it's like your competitors are all using us and doing well. What are you doing? And and then from there, you can use Facebook retargeting once they reach the site and all these things to just stay in front of them. Remember, all these engineers use Facebook. Like, it's okay to, and you want to just stay in front of them as much as possible and feel official, especially when you're talking to an engineer at a company, because their biggest reason not to use you is they don't want to lose their job. So if they're going to talk to you and think about working with you, the problem with most organizations, almost all, is there's not a lot of incentive to take risk on a new vendor. So you have to show them why you're going to be such a big win that the reward so outweighs the risk of their job that, like, this is worth it. And you do that through credibility, through your own content, through thought leadership, through validation, through all that. And you literally just continue to trickle all this into them, because everybody's sold by a different note too. Like, you never know if it's going to be the fact that their competitor used you, it's going to be the fact that you had something really smart to say, or the fact that just a year later they actually needed you. You know, it's those kind of things that really help. But from a digital marketing perspective on a situation like that, it's usually the nurturing and trust aspect, not the awareness aspect. Sia? Yeah.
So what exactly is your strategy or solution for testing audiences, copy, creative? How do you go about?
Yeah, so I mean, Facebook specifically, you start with your lookalike audience, so whoever you've already, like, that's always going to be the best performing. And then it's about incrementally testing away from that. So you start with widening the age group. You start with widening the audience base. You know, meaning, like, let's try. And we usually, like, go down the fairway with 80% of the budget and test with 20 at all times. And, you know, the nice thing about Facebook is, and is it location-based, or are you guys online and can be anywhere? It's location-based. So, you know, there's only so many people you can hit at the same time. Like, I would, in those situations, we usually just set the budget, try to maximize it as much as possible, but you're only going to get a certain radius, and then it's going to diminish very quickly. So that's part of it too. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's scientific method. You know, set a test. You know, set a what your thesis is in terms of the performance of the test. Like, whichever one gets more clicks is going to be the winner, whatever you're trying to test. But make sure that you control all the variables that, like, you just said it. Keep the same creative and change the audience. If you change the creative and the audience, you don't know which one performs. So.